You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we have another Taco Tuesday, although this one might not be as fun. We have Spencer Schultz, who is always fun. Spencer, how are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Ravens are still 2-2. I'm not crying, but I was yelling yesterday, that's for sure.
It was a brutal game to watch, and, you know, well, not the most fun. We have seen some positive trends going on throughout the first quarter of the season, so let's just get right into those general themes. And I want to start out with the offensive line, because they were a question mark coming into the season, especially at two positions on the interior, with Matt Skura being the starting center and Bradley Bozeman ending up winning that left guard competition and being thrown into that fire being a starter. What have you seen out of the entire offensive line through the first quarter of the season?
Number one thing, just going left to right, we'll do it. Ronnie Stanley's a beast. He's great. He's great in pass protection. It was displayed against the Browns, who have, you know, Olivier Vernon and Myles Garrett on the outside, obviously. And Garrett was a non-factor against Stanley. Stanley was outstanding. He's been improved, more aggressive in the run. Then we'll go to Bradley Bozeman. Bozeman was a guy I could see. I was kind of projecting that Powers or maybe Macari might end up taking over for him by this point in the year, one quarter of the way through. But that's not the case. Bozeman's a little bit more flexible and a little bit more mobile, and the Ravens like to pull him a lot so that he's not kind of having to be attacked straight up. So they kind of hide him a little, but I think he's done a solid job. He's let up 2 sacks, I believe, in the last 2 weeks, one to Chris Jones last week, then one to Olivier Vernon on the Ravens' first possession, which was a very poor play by him. He stopped moving his feet. The only thing he had to do was get in Olivier Vernon's way to the inside so that Vernon would have to go outside, and he did the opposite. He gave him his face, and Vernon crossed his face, gave him a punch in the pads, knocked him over. I'm not disappointed. I'm a little bit pleasantly surprised with Bozeman. Skura has definitely been the most improved offensive lineman. Other than Lamar Jackson, might be the most improved offensive player for me. And I was someone who is hypercritical. I wanted a center in the first round. I wanted Eric McCoy, who was drafted by the Saints in the second round. I wanted a new center. I was very displeased with Skura's snap accuracy, his kind of tiny frame and inability to anchor. And that has all been nullified. He is bigger physically, he is bigger mentally, and he is sealing blocks. He's moving better at the second level. He has not been getting dominated by any stretch of the imagination, so happy with Skura and somewhat with Bozeman. Then Yanda, of course, has been stout. He seems like he's having a ton of fun, which is kind of surprising. I feel like this is kind of just like a, you know, random emotional take more than anything backed up, but I was kind of expecting maybe he wouldn't be in it as much. He's been riding with the Joe Flacco offense and that regime of Ravens offensive football, but he seems to be having a ton of fun. He loves to run block, and the Ravens for years have kind of faltered and gone more towards the direction of passing the ball, and now Yanda's getting to get out in space and really be a dancing bear, mauling some gorillas coming after him on the defensive lines of opposing teams. Then Orlando Brown still has to refine some things technically as far as footwork and just blitz assignments and things, but I'm way higher than most are on Orlando Brown. I think that he's played really well. I think he can be a dominating force that opens up lanes, and he's played pretty solid to me. I think he's, you know, in probably the upper half of the league for sure as far as right tackles, and he's blocking out the sun. He's moving decently, and I think he's only going to improve as time goes on. So the offensive line as a whole has probably been the biggest pleasant surprise for the Ravens, and they're playing well. They're starting to get some continuity, and knock on wood, 1,000 times, they're healthy right now. So that's a huge thing going down the stretch moving forward.
Health is huge, and part of the reason that Lamar Jackson has been so improved has been because of that offensive line play. And Spencer, I want to ask you about Lamar Jackson, because there's been a lot to digest about his play in the first quarter of the season. He has not been perfect. We got maybe a little false imagination once those first two games were over, and now he's kind of fallen back down to earth. But overall, I've been very, very impressed with what Lamar has done over these first four games, especially with not only his accuracy, but his ball security. I mean, those two interceptions, I wouldn't even fault on Lamar Jackson. He had to throw the ball deep to Mark Andrews based off of what the score dictated, and then that second play where Jermaine Whitehead came untouched, kind of hit the ball out of Jackson's hand, and the defensive lineman tapped it to himself. But overall, Spencer, what have you seen out of Lamar Jackson?
He's confident. He knows the offense. He's confident. He's making more adjustments at the line. He is a confident thrower. His mechanics are obviously improved. And for those that are being critical of Lamar Jackson, and if you think that's why this team is 2-2 instead of 3-1 or 4-0, you're watching the wrong things, and I don't know what game you're watching. Dude's on pace for 5,392 total yards, 44 touchdowns, and as you mentioned, Kevin, so he would be on pace for 8 interceptions. That is because he's threw 2 interceptions in this game. One was just a great play with the Browns free safety kind of ball hawking center fielder over top of Mark Andrews, who had a linebacker falling at his feet and wasn't able to make an aggressive play on the ball. That wasn't a bad throw. He threw it up. It was a pass. It could have been a completion, an incompletion, or an interception. So it ended up being an interception there. I'm not mad about it at all. It wasn't, you know, some poor throw missing a robber cover free safety underneath that just snagged it and took it to the house or something like that. Then the other one, as you said, he got hit as he was throwing. The ball came up in the air. How many times do you see defensive linemen try to fumble around and grab an interception and it falls to the ground? So those ones there were unlucky. A gentleman I was conversing with from PFF was saying that he has thrown 7 passes into tight coverage or into double coverage. And he was trying to say that with kind of a negative connotation, but through 4 games, he's thrown 7 of those passes, when actually Next Gen Stats had him with 0 passes into double coverage through 3 games. I believe that was the first one he threw into double coverage, that deep interception, and he was trying to give his 6'5" playmaker a chance. Particularly in this Browns game, there was a huge drop on an RPO by Hollywood that hit him in the hands with a head of steam that I would not have been surprised at all if he took it to the house. Then Mark Andrews also had a poor drop on kind of like a corner route that Lamar threw away from defenders, and Andrews had to make the slight adjustment, wasn't able to bring it down, and then another big play negated by Chris Moore failing to toe tap. So I'm very happy with what I've seen from Lamar. The fumbles have been knocked out for the most part. He seems to have better control in the ball fake and ball control offense. I'm happy as hell that he's the Ravens starting quarterback. I am a Ravens fan, and I wouldn't really prefer to have anybody else right now. I love his moxie. I love his competitiveness. I love the highlight plays he makes, and I also love the decisions he's been making this year. So 65 completion percentage, number 4 QBR in the NFL. His quarterback rating is up around 110, which is up there as well. He's leading the league in most metrics, and if you think that a guy who's on pace for 5,400 yards and 44 touchdowns is the reason this team has kind of slipped a little bit the last 2 weeks, look elsewhere, because that's not it.
And I think Ravens fans, or at least diehard Ravens fans, know that Lamar Jackson has improved so much over, you know, just the course of these first 4 games compared to what he was doing last year. And the mass media doesn't really understand that. They don't spend time watching Ravens games because the Ravens aren't a big market. They like Lamar Jackson because he was dominant in college. And the Ravens have been getting a little more media exposure than they have in recent years. But
for sure,
with that comes people who really haven't watched Ravens football for many years, so they don't know what the team has been looking like. They don't know the transition, how hard it was to go from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson, and how pretty seamlessly the coaching staff made that work. And now that Lamar is improving and they got 2 weeks of him really dominating, and now they're seeing, you know, quote unquote real competition is what they're calling it. But the NFL in general is real competition. You're not going to, these 53 man rosters are stacked with talent, whether it's the New England Patriots or the Miami Dolphins. So either way, I think Lamar's improved a ton. But an area where the Ravens might have dropped off a bit was with these linebackers. With the departure of CJ Mosley, Patrick Owusu, Kenny Young, Chris Board, we're all asked to step up, and so far haven't done the best job over these first 4 games. Spencer, how do you expect these guys to improve, and what have you seen out of them?
It's Goldilocks. They're hot and they're cold. They're never just right. This defense is getting shredded, and rightfully so in many ways, because they've allowed 1,000 yards and 71 points over the last 2 weeks. Let's think about the second half against the Browns. It was a 10-7 ball game. Nick Chubb had, I believe, 7 carries for 11 yards. So things really fell apart in the second half. I think the Browns kind of schemed some things up and saw some things and were able to take advantage. The linebackers have, on a play-to-play basis, they're either too aggressive, and that's in coverage as well, where they're too aggressive. And if they're running a hook to curl in a cover 3 match zone or something, they're jumping at the first receiver and turning their head to the quarterback. And they need to know that teams are kind of taking advantage of that. And the Browns, I believe, threw 2 passes over 20 yards yesterday. One was a wide open blown coverage between Humphrey and Jefferson. to Ricky Seals-Jones, who rumbled for about 60 yards. And the other was an incompletion where Odell Beckham, they had dead to rights, and he kind of heaved one up into a jump ball situation downfield that was also incomplete. So the linebackers are part of a learning experience. Owosso's only been playing linebacker for 3 years now in his entire football career. Kenny Young has flashes. He flashes on a consistent basis. He makes plays in the backfield. He gets quarterback hits. He's a good blitzer. But they're too impatient in coverage, and then they're flying too aggressively oftentimes against run concepts. The Browns took advantage of that on the back-breaking 88-yard touchdown where two tackles pulled, and Owosso kind of scraped over top, which is what he was supposed to do. But they knew the Ravens were going to scrape over top hard, and that was just going to open a Mack truck-sized lane for Nick Chubb to take all 230 pounds of, you know, his physique running 22 miles an hour and score the longest touchdown on the ground that the Ravens have allowed in team history. So the linebackers as a whole just aren't fluid. They're jumpy, they're frantic, or in coverage, there's situations where, like I said, Jarvis Landry is running past Patrick Owosso. There's no one else in his zone. Baker Mayfield's staring at Jarvis Landry, and for some reason it's taking Patrick Owosso like three extra beats to turn and run with Landry as Landry's kind of rolling right past him and can tell they're playing zone. What do you think a receiver is going to do over the middle of the field? They're going to go try to sit in the soft spot in your zone and move the chains. That's exactly what happened there. So the linebackers need to get back to fundamental football. And what that means as an inside linebacker is the ball is snapped. Your first decision is run or pass, and they bite on play actions. Play actions are really tough to defend for inside linebackers when heavily executed, but the first decision you make is run or pass, and that's usually going to be announced by the interior offensive lineman, the offensive lineman. If you see someone pulling or if you see the offensive lineman attacking forward, that's going to be a run play in all likelihood, so you're going to want to start to move where that ball is going. You don't want to start opening up and sprinting. You want to first diagnose, then you want to read. Where is the run going? Is the run going to the outside? Is there a pulling guard? I want to run with him on his inside hip and scrape over top so that I can wash it out to the sideline. And then the third thing you want to do, so you want to diagnose, you want to read, and then you want to run. They're running too quickly. It seems like this ball is snapped. They're running, then reading, then diagnosing, and it's out of funk. It's out of sorts. So they need to get back to fundamental football and kind of let the plays come to them, especially in the run game more so. And then in the passing game, they need to be a little more aggressive at times while still having awareness of, are these teams trying to take advantage of me running with someone in my zone and then sending someone underneath to replace that receiver in my zone, because then my zone is completely open. So it's fundamental football. I think that the Ravens inside linebackers in November and December are going to look night and day as opposed to what they look like currently. So expect a lot of improvement. I would say post bye week, I would expect this team to really be able to dot some I's and cross some T's schematically and confidence wise and with the defense. So they're a work in progress for sure. And hopefully they're at their lowest point now and they're going to be able to pick it up from here.
Definitely. And so we're going to go to break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about the Browns game, what went wrong, what Spencer saw. So stay tuned for that. We will be right back. But before we do that, treat yourself to a meal you deserve and have your favorite restaurants come to you with DoorDash. Right now, our listeners can get $5 off their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter promo code LOCKEDON. Also, at the end of a hard week, it's great to sit down, take some time off, and watch some football. Game-winning touchdowns on two-minute drives, running backs racing down the sidelines with no one to stop them. There's nothing else like the NFL, and there's no better way to make the games even more exciting than to bet on them. So do the smart thing and go to mybookie.a-g. No one gives you more ways to win than they do. MyBookie's got the fastest payouts and better lines than any other sports book. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code LOCKEDON to activate the offer. That's promo code LOCKEDON. Visit mybookie.a-g today. You play, you win, and you get paid. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Ravens. Spencer Schultz is still with us here, and we're just going to get right into this Browns and Ravens game because they're is a lot of overreaction going on right now. Some of it is warranted, but a lot of fans are hitting the panic button in September. And Spencer, I want to start with the offense. And you talked about how the offensive line has played through the first quarter of the season, but I want to zone in on this Browns game. Bradley Bozeman didn't look as good as he had looked over the last few weeks. And you mentioned Ronnie Stanley looking good against Myles Garrett. But overall, what was your overall assessment of that offensive line?
I think that they are playing in unison, and it's something that was difficult to see. And it's just as simple as firing off the ball together at the same time cohesively. The ball is snapped. Your footwork is in unison. Your pad level is in unison as a unit. And any offensive line coach will tell you the number one most important thing that an offensive line as a group can have is continuity. And knowing what the man next to you needs help with, knowing how the man next to you can help you. So the fact that the Ravens have been able to trot five starters out there for the first four games is great. There are countless teams around the league where that has not been the case. And you said it, Bradley Bozeman he's the weak link of the line right now. But if he's the weakest link, he's not playing terribly. I know that PFF is pretty high on him, actually, on a play-to-play basis, because that's how they take their grading system. And Bozeman's bad plays aren't backbreakers usually. And then he doesn't have too many of them. The Ravens, like I said, like to pull him a lot, get him in space so that he's not getting attacked up front and having to kind of anchor immediately. He doesn't have great push off the ball, but he's all right. He's okay. He's an okay left guard. I'm not concerned about the offensive line at all. That is probably the strength of the team. So I'm happy with the offensive line's play as a whole.
Definitely. And looking at the Browns game, with the offense, it really boiled down to a couple plays. They were not really capitalizing in the first half, but then as the second half started to roll around, I mean, they were able to get a little bit of movement on the offensive front, but didn't really capitalize on those opportunities. So what were a few plays that you saw that really changed the tide of this game on the offensive side of the ball?
On the offensive side of the ball, it was, of course, the Mark Ingram fumble. And last week, Marlon Humphrey made a crazy great tomahawk strip of Sammy Watkins early in the Chiefs game. Anthony Averett was not able to fall on it, and so the bounce didn't fall the Ravens' way. Then again, Mark Ingram has the ball high and tight. Mark Ingram is a player that has never in his entire career as a Heisman-winning workhorse at Alabama through his years with the Saints had a ball security problem. The ball was just punched out. Sometimes it's as simple as that. Browns made a good play. The Ravens couldn't fall on it. There's too many Browns in the area. So give kudos to the Browns there for making a play. That was a real backbreaker. Then the Chris Moore toe tap extravaganza was obviously quite difficult to watch as that was in a crucial situation in the game. Would have loved to see a little bit more accurate of a ball, but also Chris Moore has to understand there, okay, this ball is going towards the sideline. I've got to give up. I've got to go dead. I've got to be a zombie, dead body. Put my feet in the ground, use the cleats on the bottom of my shoes, and then fall out of bounds with it. He was trying to do too much, and sometimes it's really hard not to as a receiver, because especially let's look at Chris Moore's, kind of situation. How many targets has he gotten? Maybe 6-7 targets so far this year. He wants to make a play. He's a guy who's good with the ball in his hands, and you see all that green grass around you. You go, ooh, buddy, I'm getting ready to run. This could go to the house. Oh, my God, I didn't catch it in bounds. Oh, no. Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. That was on third down, and that one really hurt. I would like to see more RPOs out of this offense. I would like to see them continue to use play action, and I'm happy the Ravens kind of stuck with the ground game even though they were down. They did that against Kansas City as well, and according to Myles Garrett after the game, that was the Browns' plan, was to kind of let the Ravens run the ball and see if they could get into a shootout, because they think it's, a little bit easier to contain a run game from scoring points than it is if the Ravens are hitting deep shots. And they were trying to hide their secondary, which was three men down. So the Ravens' offense is not the problem. They're in the top of the league, top five, top seven in virtually every metric. Touchdowns, first downs, third down efficiency, yards, points, all that good stuff. Yards per attempt, they're, Lamar Jackson's one of the 10 highest passers in that category and in air yards and all that good stuff. So the offense is very young. The oldest player is obviously Marshall Yanda. The next oldest player is Willie Snead, and he's only 27. There's only going to be growth as this season moves on and as the Ravens have most of their offensive pieces locked up moving forward into the future years on the horizon. So the offense is playing really well. I'm happy with the tight ends. I'm happy with Pat Ricard. I'm happy with the receivers for the most part. And on this Browns game, Miles Boykin really shined to me. He looked confident. He took what was there. He wasn't, flustered. He was able to secure catches when he had an opportunity to. So very happy with Boykin. Obviously, Hollywood kind of had a big drop there Sunday. Receivers are playing well for being so young. And the offense hasn't been the problem. We'll just leave it at that.
Definitely. And you mentioned growth. I think that that's all the Ravens are going to do. You such a young team, and I think that there were so many expectations coming into the year because the Ravens had won the North, gotten to the playoffs, and there were a lot of players on the defensive side of the ball, especially who the Ravens were not able to retain and who they moved on from. So this is a growing process. Michael Pierce alluded to the fact that defense hasn't gelled yet, maybe because, you know, they're just new pieces there. And it's the same thing with the offense. They just have to gel, have to work. And the offense so far has been working. But Spencer, the last thing I want to ask you before the break is you talked about the Browns having a lack of a secondary with Greedy Williams, Denzel Ward out, their top two cornerbacks, and the Browns wanting to really force the Ravens to beat them on the ground. The Browns really had the Ravens play right into their hands. Were you expecting more of a passing attack?
No, I thought that the Ravens were going to want to run the ball, and they did. They did it well. They have every single week this season so far. They've been efficient and effective as a whole. I expected the Browns to try and hide those corners in that secondary and see if you can get Lamar to be inaccurate, but it's become evident you don't want Hollywood to beat you deep. So they're going to make you beat them elsewhere. And that's kind of the same thing that happened after the beginning of the 2018 season where John Brown was kind of toasting everybody. So they stopped letting him. They started giving help over top and that whole thing. And then John Brown became somewhat ineffective. So I think Hollywood has a little bit more of a complete skill set than John Brown. And we've seen the speed outs where if you give Hollywood cushion, he'll take 6 yards every time and maybe make a play out of it here and there. But I was expecting the offense to kind of look exactly like it did. The Browns have a good front. They got a little bit of pressure. The Browns, I thought, would be even a little more stout against the run than they were. But this was kind of what I was expecting from the offense this week.
Understood. And so we're going to go to break right now. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the defense. And there is quite a bit to dissect there. So stay tuned for that. And we will be right back. Welcome back, everybody, to Locked On Ravens. We are still here with Spencer Schultz. And Spencer, talking about the defense, I mean, the story of the game was blown coverages, blown assignments. The word miscommunication over the past 3 weeks has been a big one. So when you talk about the secondary and how they played against Cleveland, are you just boiling it down to the scheme being too difficult, or is there really just an issue where the defense hasn't gelled yet?
It's not the secondary necessarily that's breaking their back right now. And there have been missed assignments. The Mecole Hardman touchdown in week 3 and the Ricky Seals-Jones in the Browns matchup this week, that, you know, kind of blown coverage. The secondary has been okay. The best way to put kind of the expectations, and I'm guilty of this as well. If you were to tell me in August, hey, I was a month into the future for 15 minutes, and I looked on my phone, I saw the Ravens snap counts. Jimmy Smith is out. Tavon Young is out. Anthony Averett and Maurice Kennedy are going to take 100 snaps defensively against the Chiefs and the Browns. I'm going to look at you and go, well, they're probably going to lose both of those games then. So they're thin right now. And I think that Kennedy has played really admirably against the Browns and probably blew that assignment against the Chiefs. People are still knocking Earl Thomas and been a lot of flack for that whole the Chubb touchdown and that Earl Thomas didn't want to pull a hamstring and yada yada. He's been in the league for a long time, guys. He knows whether he can track someone down or not. It was obvious. Nick Chubb hit almost 22 miles per hour on that carry. It was the fastest of any ball carrier has hit per next-gen stats on a touchdown. Earl just wasn't going to get him there. Earl has not been targeted deep. Teams are avoiding him like the plague, instead opting to throw it around the linebackers. And the pass problems are happening because of the linebackers. I don't think the secondary is exactly the problem. There have been lapses in coverage between Humphrey and Jefferson. And again, I'm standing up for Tony Jefferson. I don't think he's been that terrible. He tackled poorly on Sunday. People are yelling on Twitter for him to get benched and all this stuff. And they want Deshaun Elliott. And I do want to see a little bit more Deshaun Elliott, but I would like to see him both on the field. The thing for Jefferson, though, conversely, that has become evident is that when there are these big plays, he happens to be around them. And if enough of those happen and he's around them, that's very sketchy. And that means that he needs to step up and be able to recognize, you know, what's going on in these situations. And if you look at the big plays that the Browns had, Jefferson kind of over-pursued with Peanut and allowed a cutback lane. But I'm not really knocking that one because you want to come down over top. If Peanut scrapes over top, that's one linebacker against two pulling linemen. He's going to need some reinforcement. Then again, the Ricky Seals-Jones was between Marlon Humphrey and Tony Jefferson. Then again, the Jarvis Landry, just a shallow drag route or a shallow cross. Jefferson comes up and tries to shoulder him. Landry's a strong dude, bowls through it, runs for 60 yards, flips the field. Then there was another play on that, the pop pass option with Beckham and Landry, which was a great play design, and Jefferson's not able to make the play. So it's just kind of becoming a theme at this point, but I do think that he is still solid and is still strong. And if you want the safeties, if you want Earl Thomas and Tony Jefferson to account and stuff the run, and you think that they should be the ones that are held responsible for Nick Chubb gashing the Ravens, you're just wrong, because the interior defensive line is not there. Bowser was not there on the long run. He was less than a foot from Nick Chubb and had no clue where Nick Chubb was. He had no clue there was a hole next to him. Tony Jefferson's job is to help the linebackers. The linebackers have been really poor, so that's made Tony Jefferson's job hard. Earl Thomas's job is to keep anything from deep happening as far as the seams and passing between the hashes. That has not hurt the Ravens thus far at all. So I think the safeties are fine. And Chris Wormley, Brandon Williams, Michael Pierce has probably played the best of the group by far. But again, those guys haven't been getting it done. And one player, people talk a lot about Za'Darius Smith, Terrell Suggs, C.J. Mosley, Eric Weddle departing. One player that I believe that the Ravens really should have retained and has been playing snaps for Tennessee is Brent Urban. Urban is a disruptor against the run game. He swats down a ton of passes. He's not nearly as stagnant as Chris Wormley is in any way. He has better footwork. He has more experience. And I think that if Brent Urban was on this Ravens team, that helps take away from some of Pernell McPhee's snaps. That helps take away from some of Michael Pierce's snaps. That helps take away from some of Chris Wormley's snaps. So that might help the Ravens be a little bit more efficient. So he's a player that sneakily, you know, similar to Lawrence Guy leaving, who ended up being really great for the Patriots and still is. Urban's not quite as great as Guy, but just a cheap player that now the Ravens have, you know, $10, $11 million sitting in their piggy bank that can't carry over to next year. So why not bring Urban back? I don't know what the issue was there. I thought he was a strong player and would help some of these issues, but it's just difficult. The scheme is very complicated. It's as everybody wanted. Dean Pease was too simple, running a lot of just cover three, four-man rushes, and everybody wanted Dean Pease out. Then we got Wink, and Wink did a great job creating pressure, and he has a really exotic defense, and he had all these veteran players, and the players all say, oh, this is great. We get all this freedom. It's on us to call the play before and make the play. Well, we don't have Eric Weddle. We don't have Za'Darius Smith. You don't have Terrell Suggs. You don't have C.J. Mosley. There's six new starters on the defense. So maybe you need to keep it a little simpler. And I would like to see more man coverage. I would like to see more Earl Thomas single high. I don't think Tony Jefferson's been terrible deep. There haven't been a lot of deep completions on him. The Ravens like to do split safeties. So put two safeties high. Play man coverage. Make them throw the ball to the middle of the field at Earl Thomas. Funnel plays to Earl Thomas instead of making Earl Thomas have to chase everything down. Try to utilize that strong center of the field that you have versus the perimeter where they've been getting gashed. And I thought that Matt Judon has played great through 3 weeks. He was poor, to be honest, against the Browns. Chubb had the touchdown run from about the 19, where he broke four tackles. The first one was Matt Judon with no knee bend, no get off. It looks like he must have been really gassed, I guess. That was after the Ricky Seals long completion on the blown assignment down the sideline, I believe. So maybe it's just a product of Judon not being able to get off the field and them relying on him too much and not trusting Bowser and Williams, which I don't fully understand, because you're making McPhee and Judon play all these snaps and they're letting up 1,000 yards and 71 points anyway. Why don't you try giving Bowser and Williams an honest shot at playing 30 snaps and seeing if you can make McPhee more efficient and Judon more efficient? I know Harbaugh said last week that basically he doesn't trust Bowser and doesn't trust Williams and they haven't played well enough. And Jalen Ferguson actually outsnapped them this week. And I didn't see anything horrible from Ferguson this week, but I would just like to see more of those guys still. And I hit on it last week. I think I said it to you, Kevin. The lack of interior pressure means I want more outside linebackers on the field. The Browns had their very first possession of the game, and on 3rd and 6, the Ravens put Pernell McPhee inside with Judon on his hip. Then on the other side, it was Michael Pierce and Bowser, so there was three outside linebackers, and they got a sack. That was their only sack of the game, and they stopped doing that. They started using Pierce and Ricard and using more defensive linemen, and they're not getting it done. Put the outside linebackers in on 3rd down and let them get after the passer. So that's kind of my whole thoughts on the defense as things stand.
I want to ask you, Spencer, or my last question here is about the Steelers game next week. What do you expect this Ravens team to do, and do you expect them to bounce back from not their best outing? Do you expect the Ravens to come out strong and motivated, or do you expect them to be a little bit of a hangover from this game?
I think that they're definitely pissed off. I think it was a big slap in the face, and hopefully it was a much-needed slap in the face where they were the number one defense last year, and I'm sure you could pick out a four-game stretch last year at some point where the Ravens didn't allow 1,000 yards and 71 points. You might even be able to find two of them. I've never been that high on Mason Rudolph. Realistically, the Ravens will be favored in all likelihood against the Steelers and then against the Bengals the following week. And if they end up 2-3, that's not good. I don't see any reason why the Ravens can't outclass the Steelers. The Steelers are reeling. Their defense is not great. Their offense is inefficient and lacks playmakers. Their offensive line of the Steelers has not been as dominant as it has been over the last couple of years. One of my co-writers, Vasily Larikos on Baltimore Beatdown, is extremely confident. I would expect the same thing as well. I think that the Ravens can dominate them, and I would expect to see the Ravens get back on track. And oddly, the Ravens seem to play better in Pittsburgh than when Pittsburgh comes to Baltimore. So if that streak continues, I'm not mad right now. As the Ravens getting back up to 3-2 and then looking forward to Cincinnati as well. Those are two winnable games for sure. Those are going to be end up probably being two of the easier games on the schedule as things stands right now. With the Seahawks coming up, the Texans coming up, the Patriots coming up, having to play the Browns again. The Bills look like a pretty formidable ball club at times as well. So got to not look past these next two games. Got to buckle down, right the ship, have the right attitude, be coachable. Coaches also have to listen to their players and understand what is not working and how to improve it and fix it.
Definitely. I think the same exact thing. I think that the Ravens are just mad and they know they can perform better. And with a Steelers team that has a lot of young players, especially now Mason Rudolph and James Conner hasn't been up to par this year, I think that the Ravens will come out strong and get a victory in Pittsburgh. And I hope that's the case. I think that this Ravens team needs it, and I think they're going to go out there and they are going to get it. But Spencer, that's all I have for you today. Thank you so much for coming on the show once again.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure, Kevin, and I hope you're right, brother.
I hope I am too. Tomorrow we are going to be getting into it with the Locked On Steelers podcast. So stay tuned for all of their analysis on the Ravens. I'm going to ask them some questions. They're going to ask me some, and I will see you tomorrow.